When I first read these scriptures today, I thought, wow, this is the good, the bad, and the ugly. There's some pretty harsh words in this Jeremiah text today. And then I thought, okay, there is good in the Hebrew scripture. So we have the good and the bad and the ugly. But then I started reading and I thought, you know, we really have the good, the bad, and the great. The great. It's never easy to hear an indictment, is it? It's never easy. No one ever in the history of time, I believe, likes to be criticized. Even those people that tell you, I really like constructive criticism. We don't. It's easier to take constructive criticism. But it's never easy because we much prefer people to say, you do everything great. That's great. Everything's wonderful. Keep it going. But here, Jeremiah, the words that he shares with us, well, it's just not easy to listen to. God, through Jeremiah, saying, look at all that I have given you. What else do you want? Everything you could ever need. And you still stray away from me. It's easy to read this and think, yeah, that's the way it was then. They had everything in the promised land, didn't they? And they strayed. They didn't do what they should have done. God brought them out of slavery and into the promised land. Why didn't they see what they had? But I look around this world today, and we really haven't straightened things up, have we? Jeremiah's scripture is every bit as relevant today, if not more, than it was then. Roy and I went and saw the movie, The Butler. What a powerful movie, if you haven't seen it. But the most powerful thing to me was to sit there and watch my lifetime, the history of my lifetime, pass by. That in my lifetime there were people who weren't allowed to go into restaurants because of the color of their skin. That in my lifetime people were tortured and killed. And the fact that we still fight discrimination because of people's belief, and we turn people away because of their relationship, and we destroy this earth a little more each day. I could go on and on because Jeremiah's words ring true. My people have changed their glory for something that does not profit. Prophet, it's an interesting word to use there. Profit, a financial gain, the difference between an amount earned and amount spent in buying. Jeremiah's words say that we have exchanged our glory for what we feel like is profit, and it's not. What makes us glorious before God? What makes us feel as though we have profited? Money in the bank? A house bigger than our neighbors? Or helping a friend? Or holding a small child who needs love? The world tells us to go for the profit. That's drilled into our head every day, isn't it? We watch infomercials that show us how to make our fortune. We buy books on how to get rich quick. We look for the bargains in all that we do. How often do we sit down and watch a show on how to treat others with kindness? How often do we read a book on how to help those in need? Oh, we may read books on how to save the planet, but how much of those things are we doing? Being foolishly wasteful is a human pattern. The fact that it's familiar adds to the indictment. John DeBivose says it like this. It's like a physician diagnosing pneumonia. We should learn to recognize the symptoms. When we are spiritually thirsty and we're empty of rewarding purpose, it's very likely that we have abandoned the gifts that really give life, and we have embraced an ineffective substitute. Can I read that again? When we are spiritually thirsty and empty of rewarding purpose, it's very likely that we have abandoned the gifts that really give life, and we have embraced an ineffective substitute. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living water, all the water they could need, and they've dug cisterns, and those cisterns are cracked and they can't hold water. But we go to the Hebrew scripture, and the Hebrew scripture gives us the good. Show love and hospitality to strangers. It's important to hear those words. Show love and hospitality. Listen to that again. Show love and hospitality. It doesn't really say teach hospitality. It doesn't really say share with others. It says show. And that is an action that requires giving of yourself. Show strangers hospitality and love. It's pretty easy to show love and hospitality to our friends, isn't it? It's easy to come here and to love each and every one of you. It's easy to show hospitality and welcome any of you into our homes or into our lives because we're friends. But to show hospitality and love to a stranger, God, we need to be careful. We teach our children, you know the saying, stranger, danger. We teach our children, stranger, danger. There are people out there that will hurt you in a minute. Whenever we go out in public, I'm constantly getting on to Roy for immediately going up and talking to kids. And I say, a parent's going to shoot you one day. Talk to the parents. Don't talk to the kids. And I know that he is doing just what we're told to do. Show love and hospitality to strangers. Because this scripture tells us that you might be entertaining angels. I don't know about you, but that's kind of a hard one for me. It's hard to imagine the people I meet day to day might actually be angels. But I think I get the spirit of that message. I've met people that the moment that I've met them, they've been the kindest and the gentlest and the most loving people. To spend just a few moments in conversation has been life-changing. I've opened the door or helped pick something up that someone's dropped or just said hello at times when a warmth has come over me and it's made my day better. Imagine if I had shown love or hospitality. A friend of ours wrote a Facebook message this morning, and I'm going to read a part of it because it, to me, was a perfect example. She was at work yesterday, working at a restaurant she works at. This is Kristen Warner. And she started to feel a little cranky pants, nothing major, just a common litany of complaints and nuances running through my head. Right about then, I looked up and I noticed that a family had been seated at one of my tables. It was a mom and a dad and a child, and as I approached them, what I saw just took my breath away. The daughter, who appeared to be 8 or 9, was very obviously battling cancer. She was almost completely bald, her eyebrows and eyelashes completely gone, her eyes sunken, her face drawn, and I sensed her spirit diminished. She was timid and reticent. Her parents were sweet folk, but they seemed tired and they looked weary. We exchanged pleasantries back and forth throughout our meal, but their eyes were vacant and distant, and I knew instinctively that a deep, deep sadness was in their obligatory smile. God, I wanted to hug them. I wanted more than that, in fact. I wanted to hear their story. I wanted to know when this happened, when the rug had been pulled out from under them, when they had learned that their precious and perfect baby girl was going to be facing this vile, dreadful, unforgiving illness. I wanted to know where they were on this journey, and I wanted to cry with them and for them. Our conversation was limited to trivial things. How's everything tasting? Can I refill that tea? Oh, it felt so small, and I felt stupid, because I wanted to say big and important things to them, and I wanted to offer words of hope and strength and compassion, and I didn't want to feed their bellies. I wanted to nourish their souls. I didn't want to fill their drinks. I wanted to fill their heart. Put simply, my heart broke for them, just utterly broke. And I realized at the end of it all, at the end of my prayers, at the end of my church attendance, my Bible study, my Sunday school, at the end of every song sung and truth proclaimed and devotional written, this is where my faith resides, indeed where it must reside. I must let my heart be broken by a world in need. Let my heart be broken. That story that she posted just a couple of hours ago moved me. And I responded back to Kristen to say, whether you knew it or not, you were probably in the presence of an angel. And whether they knew it or not, they also were in the presence of an angel. As you prayed for them, as you served them, as you showed them love, even if it wasn't in a way that you wanted to. We go through our lives, and there are those that we need to be open to. There are lives we need to touch. There are those we just need to say a prayer for. I think that's where Jeremiah's scripture and this Hebrew scripture is leading us today. And that is to say, it's not all about me. It's not at all about me. I look around and I see the heartache and the sickness and the poverty, the hatred, the war, the violence. What have we come to and where does it end? And it can only end in one place, right here, when I allow my heart to be broken. I can make sure that I show love and hospitality. I can make sure that I stand up for those in need. I can make sure that I seek justice in the world around me. I can make sure that I don't get involved in all the petty disagreements that have nothing to do with what's important. The love of Christ shown to all. I can make sure that every person that walks through our doors knows that they have a seat at this table. That nothing prevents anyone from coming to that table. And that's where the great comes. That I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. You can still have confidence that I will be with you. Do not be afraid. What can anyone do to you as long as you are welcome at the table? C.S. Lewis once keenly observed that while Christians may think what they most want is to possess life's beauty, this is not their deepest hope. Their most ardent hope and desire is to share in the beauty, to participate in the beauty and the goodness of life. What's the word to the old songs? Love is only love when you give it away. This table. Is ours. It was given for each one of us. And the only thing required of us is to make sure that everyone knows they're welcome.